Welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to have James Hams on the podcast today. James is head of HR, people and culture at Blue Wave Technology, and very passionate about the topic. We actually met a few weeks ago, if I remember correctly, more or less kind of randomly. And yeah, I just noticed how excited and passionate you are about you know, people and HR and culture. So I thought it would be amazing to have you on the show and talk a bit about your journey and your thoughts about the space. Nice to have you, James.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I guess first impressions made an impact. That's always good. Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I think it was just talking about HR and tech and how the two are combining and transformation of HR these days. So
yeah,
happy.
That's
to
right. And if I remember correctly, you used to work in kind of like project management related to technology, and kind of then went into the people sphere. Maybe that's a good kind of bridge to your background. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, you know, how you ended up in HR and people.
Yeah, so I suppose the career until before HR was in tech and, you know, implementing Salesforce and Workday. So probably in the tech world, very familiar brands and names that people have heard of. But it was the opportunity to work with the HR function in a previous organization that actually meant that I was interacting with HR, not just for myself as an individual. And the outcome of that was just this kind of moment of feedback, which simply said, hey, have you ever considered working in HR rather than just working with us on these kinds of projects? Because I guess the nature of project management is in essence about people management and how do you support people, help them to overcome whatever their challenges are so that you get the project done successfully. And that was how I ended up, I guess, my first step into HR. And with that, I ended up really focusing on people experience with understanding how tech could help with that.
And as part of your journey in HR itself, but then also, you know, when you implemented, you know, systems for different companies, you must have a good insight into the role of, let's say, people ops, kind of, or the how it works in different companies, or let's say the role of people ops as a professional, how that varies across different sizes and companies, you know, small companies, startups, large enterprises. How would you say that role evolves or varies across, you know, different types of companies?
So I suppose at the multinational global level where, you know, your HR function as a whole can be several hundred people, the people ops will be its own dedicated function and service team and could be in itself maybe 30 to 50 people. And they effectively may be, you might call, back-end users of whatever HR technology platforms you have and almost exclusively spend their entire time embedded in that. So they're almost like technical users in very, they just happen to be specializing in HR. And then really scaling it back down to the opposite end of the spectrum where you're dealing with a small to medium size enterprise or business that maybe is 100 people or less, that people operations needs to be slick and efficient and in terms of the tooling, because the individual, and it probably is just one individual, maybe if you're lucky it'll be two, have to do that on top of all of the other HR and people pieces of work, unless it maybe is outsourced, in which case you've got a different kind of challenge that the kind of person responsible for HR people has to do from within the organization, for sure. So mm-hmm. Pretty extreme differences, I'd say. But in all cases, I guess more on the employee perspective is whether it's an in-house team of one to an in-house team of 100 or it's outsourced, their experience is they don't really care which one of those it is. They just want to know that they can get to the data they want. They can make a change. or ask a question and get an answer. And from their perspective, in the world now of sort of instant gratification or instant response, you know, the kind of, I guess, the Amazon next day delivery kind of concept is we want it to be frictionless, I guess, is the word of choice.
And you mentioned outsourcing this context as well. How have you had experience with outsourced HR in a company, and how does it actually differ in terms of the, let's say, the impact on the employee, or maybe the employer as a company or as an organization?
So I haven't had, I wouldn't say that I've done a lot of it. So there may be people that are more experienced than myself that can speak to the good, the bad, and like maybe some dream moments and some real hellish moments. I'd say that it is different in the sense that it can be more transactional. So the outsourced agency is unlikely to really know who you are, but they will know simply by saying, hey, can you give me your name? And then looking up your employee record and be able to obviously see the data and establish who you are, what you do, and then answer maybe particular queries. But there won't be the same personal element from that outsourced provision. But at the same time, it might be more expert or more specialist. So if you are asking those more complicated questions, you might find that you get either a more accurate answer or an answer more with greater speed. Because particularly in the SME, SMB market, that one individual may be trying to answer your question on payroll whilst also answering someone else's question on legal entity, whilst asking someone else's question about talent and hiring. Yes, okay, at a global level, you might say, oh, well, there's a team of 100 doing it, but they might be serving an employee base of 100,000, in which case, you know, yes, there's 100 of you, but it still doesn't mean you're getting instant response, and you lose an element of that personal nature because, you know, the ratios are just so much bigger. So it depends on the organization for sure.
Yeah. And how do you try to develop that personal element of your role when you work in a company, and how do employees kind of get the benefit of that, or you know, how does it help them in their journey as an employee in the company?
So I'll answer the bit about how you make someone feel like a person, an individual and a human first, and then what I try and do. So the element comes down to whether you want to call it acknowledgement, recognition, gratitude, respect, you know, a lot of these kind of buzzword that you see often on walls and companies talking about their values, right? But it's actually doing that piece because, as an example, in an office-based scenario, if the CEO happens to walk into that office, does that CEO then at least acknowledge the person that's maybe at the office desk of reception as being present, and or are they treated as if they're invisible? And that can be a really simple piece of recognition that makes them feel more human, more valued, and helps them to genuinely go, I'm part of this organization, I am treated like a human being. And obviously that's a very simple example, right? But you can obviously elevate that and make it more complex depending on the connection that you have with the other peer or colleague. I suppose elevating that as an example is actually knowing how someone wants to be recognized. You know, like it's not always money, or that person actually prefers more time off, or that person doesn't want to have a big fanfare. They would prefer to have a private recognition rather than, you know, making them stand up and everyone kind of knowing who they are. And then I guess from an HR perspective, because a lot of that might be deemed to be sort of the manager and team member relationship in larger organizations. So what does HR do? So I guess from the HR perspective, the focus then spins to what a lot of organizations might call their health and well-being pillars, and where HR might then focus on the mental, emotional, and social aspects of an individual, so they feel more like a person. Because you can give money and as much money to someone, it doesn't make them necessarily feel more like a human being. And that challenge is really about, I suppose, from my side, note taking to a degree. I know it's a bit of a kind of archaic art, maybe, but obviously you can still take notes in the digital world. And being able to go, okay, the last time we spoke, it was only 2 months ago. Oh, and I noted that you went on holiday to Greece. You know, how was that? And suddenly, you know, these more individualized, more personalized questions, as opposed to, hey, how are you doing? What have you been up to? Yes, obviously they'll tell you, oh, I went to Greece, but it's the difference of being like, oh, I remember that you were going to Greece versus just what have you been up to? And although it's technically the same question when it's broken down, the difference is how personal it's been made.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of this comes down to the behavior of people, or let's say the way that people interact and communicate with each other. And oftentimes you're not sitting in that room, right? Or maybe you're not even present. How, and maybe that's part of the challenge here, how you, as let's say, not an outsider, but somebody who may not be directly involved in 99% of communication that goes in the company, can help the organization actually build the behavior around the values that you want to foster. So let's say, for example, you do want to recognize each other's work, each other's presence, right? In the example that you mentioned with the CEO walking in the receptionist, how can you, as let's say, a single person in an organization of 100 people, help people, build that right behavior?
The individual level, you know, we talk about role modeling, whether you're whatever individual you are, does it, you don't have to be the C-suite. I think one of the things for me is the difference between a manager and a leader. And a manager is someone that has been appointed a particular position of, I guess, authority, that has particular responsibilities. But a leader actually could be anyone. You know, anyone could help uplift someone else. Anyone could help show someone else how to do something, or assist them in their struggles. And from that aspect, they are leading others in some shape or form. And I think that's probably the piece is, although I am one individual, if I can help be a role model, if I can help lead on how, the behaviors that I would like to exhibit, you know, kind of demonstrate what you want to see others do. Hopefully, that is, you know, that kind of process of repeatedly doing that and providing that experience to others hopefully helps to reflect that. And just on that, I guess dipping into a bit of science is that if someone is saying, oh, but I don't get, you know, anything out of it, it's a bit fluffy, it's a bit soft, the psychological impact of someone giving someone else a compliment typically uplifts you just as potentially just as much as it uplifts them. Now, the person that's receiving does need to have some level of respect of the other individual and believe it is authentic and genuine. Obviously, you can't say, hey, what a fantastic week, if someone's, you know, actually not done very well that week at work. It's just not going to resonate. It's the demise of the kind of participant medal that you have in a lot of schools. It's like, actually, it devalues the individual who receives the participant medal and devalues the person that receives like the accomplishment medal, because they're like, well, everyone gets a medal, so my medal is worth less. And the person that receives the participant medal goes, well, I don't deserve a medal, but you've given me one, so now I feel ashamed. So actually, you've ruined the concept of recognition and award, utilizing that model. But where it's genuine, giving it as soon as possible and being specific about it, so that people actually know what it is that you're giving them the recognition for. And those actually are really simple things. And for me, I believe it is a superpower that we all have. We just underutilize it massively. But again, like if we want to use another example that's factual and scientific based. So FTSE Russell, the kind of research piece of the FTSE group, literally did the study looking at the, I think it was the last 30 odd years of benchmark performance on various industrial indexes. Those companies that regularly come up as, you know, great places to work, happy employees, have low turnover, outperform their market competitors every single year over that last 30 years. Without, there is not even one anomaly, right? You'd expect there to be an anomaly, but there isn't an anomaly, and on the average was around 10% outperformance. So when someone says, I guess from HR and is trying to present a business case to finance to say this is why we should make investment on what is not a revenue generating kind of function, you can say, well, actually this investment has the indirect benefits to all of the other functions that lifts the whole organization up, and if done correctly, can lift it up to generate a 10% increase in revenue within a within potentially a 12-month period. And then suddenly the finance director goes, crikey, that's my performance metric and my shareholder bonus right there.
And would you say that the, let's say, you mentioned some examples like, recognition, let's say interpersonal interactions. On a grander scheme, does org design also play a role in this? So the way kind of the processes or the, let's say the, if you gamified the company, right, into like a set of rules, does that have a role in this as well, or is it really more about how people treat each other and recognize each other?
So I'm sure there are those specialists that operate almost exclusively in OD, organizational design, that probably have their kind of expert hat on. So I guess from my personal viewpoint is, if you imagine a juggler, there are only so many balls you can really juggle effectively with two hands. So if you take the average person who is not trained to be a juggler and you ask them to juggle two balls, maybe three, it's going to take a lot of time. And even if they've practiced a lot, add another a fourth ball for them to juggle, that's going to be hard. And if you take the same kind of analogy, you've asked someone to be a manager of people, of hopefully to then become a leader of people and not just a delegator of tasks and looking at their metrics and their outputs. It's difficult realistically, I think, to manage effectively and really have the impact of lifting those people up, supporting them, enabling and empower them to be more productive. When you get to sort of beyond five or six people that are directly reporting to you. And obviously that scales and triangulates outwards. But I think it is hard when you see teams that are sizes of 12 plus. Can you really spend enough time with them? Some people say, oh, it doesn't matter. They are, I guess HR, they are a resource. But I kind of move back to that kind of Project Aristotle is another point of reference. Is what's the greatest single factor that demonstrates successful teams? And that is psychological safety, which is about having that ladder of safety to the point that you feel safe to challenge someone else's opinion. That's quite a high level of safety that someone needs to feel to be at their most productive. And considering now, if we're talking about particularly the developed countries and developed worlds and sort of tech, and those are very complex, creative roles that a lot of people are in. And so that need to challenge and be creative is the kind of psychological safety that people need, which is only attained when they're feeling at their absolute safest.
That's a very good point. You mentioned the concept of recognition. So if you just give a blanket recognition to everybody and everybody gets the same thing, it kind of ruins it for both sides, both the people that really feel like they would deserve the recognition, but also the ones that feel like maybe they shouldn't have gotten the recognition. Does that go into kind of the area of like performance management or like, let's call it performance management, right? Which is like the traditional thing, how companies may call it. What's kind of the role of that in all of this, in distributing recognition, let's say, in a fair manner?
So I think that this is the crossroads between what is recognition, what is awards, and what are rewards, and breaking those down. So I, for me, a recognition is something that anyone can give and often can be given instantly. So it can come from a peer, it can come from a colleague, but equally it could come from a senior manager, an executive. But it's the ability that anyone can give recognition. And that's why it's a superpower that I think we underutilize collectively as people. An award is often something that is nomination based. There's either some voting or some sort of like entry criteria involved, and there is often a panel, whether it's a peer panel or a kind of external panel that selects a winner. And then there is your rewards, you say, sort of your performance focused. And this is, I guess, if you refer to someone like Simon Sinek or Adam Grant, thought leaders, a lot of that metric on performance is very much focused on naturally quantifiable metrics. How much revenue did you generate for the business? How many contracts did you get signed? What were your sales figures? What's your CSAT score? Things like that. Those are the what you achieved. But we have very few or no metrics on how we achieve them. And I think that this is starting to change in some elements of the reward world. But an example is if someone gets the top sales numbers at the end of the month, and often this is the case kind of in stereotypical organizations, that individual then gets the top bonus of that month. But we then have to look at how did that sale actually sort of manifest itself, was created, was born, and was achieved. The marketing team did, and sometimes marketing do get a percentage, sometimes they don't. Potentially the technical lead that does some of the pre-sales element, they technically might sit in R&D, and R&D may not be part of the kind of commission model. They might be part of the profit share model. But how did that person in sales interact with pre-sales R&D technician, the marketing team? And do we have a metric or any kind of 360 feedback loop that says, that person in sales was actually really good in collaborating with marketing, with R&D, with the product owner, so that the sale was achieved? Or did they exploit them, leverage them, pull them off other work so that they could get their individual sale? And an example actually of how this is completely turned on its head in an industry that typically is very individual orientated is actually a company called Egon, I think it's Egon Zander. So it's a large executive recruitment search firm. They have almost, or if I'm absolutely correct, they have no individual based performance reward approach. It is entirely team focused. And the example that was given is a client in Germany may say, we're expanding our US office in our sales function, and we're looking to hire the next sales VP for the North Americas. Now, that person in the German part of Egon Zander is not going to know the American market. But if we did an individualized performance reward approach, that person says, fantastic, that's another, 20% commission. If I find this person, I will take it on myself because it's a great role. VP, obviously, the bonus will be fantastic. But the chances are they don't have the network. It'll take them really long to find, and the client that's asked for this will unlikely get the best experience possible. So they've gone to a very team-focused approach, and it says, right, great, thank you for asking. I will put you in touch with the America lead in sales that will know the market, know the network, know exactly who to reach out to and contact to expand your American business. And so, yes, that individual didn't get the, in a normal world, didn't get the commission, but in this very team-oriented world, they provided the best service for the customer that allowed them to perform better and be more productive. That meant collectively they all win.
And does that play into the area of OKRs at all, as well? Because you have the concept of, high-level company OKRs, team-based OKRs, individual OKRs. Have you played around in your career with, let's say, the weighting and the balances and the focus on those areas, and what's the most meaningful?
It's an area that I would like to, I guess, what I've referred to so far is a lot of external, like research and kind of information. I think it's an area that I would like to investigate further, the current organizations or the current functions that I've worked with have been less within the kind of individual area and where I've been before. It's been a blended reward approach, which I think is probably the hybrid at the moment, because people still want to feel that their recognition for their personal contributions are reflected as part of their personal reward. So I can understand that, why does someone else benefit from my hard work scenario? But I think what we can do is do more of the peer-related metric to influence, focusing on the longer-term success of a business. How did we achieve the output rather than what was the output and simply meriting the output itself? So if a company genuinely says, we are values orientated business, then make part of the performance review reflecting on how did you demonstrate the values, and not just a manager to team member conversation, but part of that kind of 360 peer related feedback, so that it is genuinely demonstrable and evidenced by those observers or people that interact with you that you have been delivering on how to achieve long-term success, rather than simply the metric of this month I hit the target.
You mentioned peer reviews. There's something that I've been talking recently quite a bit about with different people in the space, different customers, and there's quite a lot of different views on how that should happen and should it be anonymous, how many people should contribute, who should pick those peers. Have you experimented with that in your experience and have figured out like what's the best way to do that? Should it be anonymous, not anonymous? Do some peers get invited by the admin or the manager? Do some peers get invited by the employee? Or does the employee always choose? I'd be curious kind of here, what's the right tweaking of, let's say, the different settings and let's say this kind of feedback process should be?
I think there should be both your, I say both, but I guess in a smaller organization, it's easier to potentially just open it up a bit like an award, right? An award is often anyone can nominate anyone. That's often one of the kind of parts of an award. So if you want to go really an ideal scenario with feedback, it should be that anyone should be able to provide feedback to anyone else, because a manager often will only see the tip of the iceberg. They have the kind of what was their output, what were the tasks they did, and the touch points they have, but they're not going to be, well, I would hope they're not hovering over them 24/7 whilst they're doing their work. I hope there's a level of autonomy and trust for the individual just to perform their role and interact with the people they need to. So in an ideal world, you would have the ability to recognize or provide feedback anyone to anyone. I guess in a more realistic scenario, typically you will have the manager knows maybe the 5 to 10 people that you interact with most, because they are the kind of the points of contact within the other functions or within the project team. So it's a natural cursor for the manager to then reach out to those individuals. But then the employee may wish to say, well, actually, I had this atypical interaction because I needed to ask, or we needed help from, or they asked for my input and help from this other thing. So, you hear a lot of people about doing internal secondments where like it challenges them to do something different, but also means that they're able to bring a different perspective. And that is something that maybe a manager wouldn't consider to reach out to that individual. So I think it does need to be a blend. From my perspective, I think one of the biggest challenges with all of these feedback and performance mechanisms is how prescriptive and how process focused they are. You follow this very rigid, very prescriptive process, often to the letter, to the decimal, to the sentence, to the full stop. And actually, in an ideal scenario, we would be more flexible, more autonomous with it. And I know some organizations get to a point where they have distributed so that anyone can actually give someone recognition and actually financial reward. It's often a small amount, but incrementally over the course of a year, some organizations enable a single employee to potentially give to hopefully a distributed number of people up to like £1,000 to £2,000, which is quite a sense of empowerment for the individual, but it makes them really think about the impact that they can have as an individual. And when we say about autonomy and empowering our people, then that's a real demonstrable example rather than saying, well, actually, only the senior managers are going to be involved in the distribution of kind of one-time rewards or annual performance bonuses.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, I remember when I was in one company that I worked in, it was kind of like this kind of investment firm. And normally most investment firms are very kind of individual, kind of, you get your feedback from your manager, you get a deal, you get your bonus. But they had this amazing concept, and I think more companies should adopt it, where if anyone in your class, so basically you have like four ranks in this firm, right? You're like a partner, you're like a VP, and like everything below, basically. If anyone sources a deal anywhere in the world in any team, everybody gets a bonus. And it's a small-ish bonus, so it's much smaller than maybe the year-end bonus that you would get. But if the whole class does quite a few deals, actually it does become quite significant. So it will maybe be, it could be 20% of your compensation at the end of the year. And it's like this shared kind of celebration that brought everybody closer together because you could now celebrate each other's successes together, which is pretty cool.
It's the incremental focus, as you say. It's and what does that do? It hopefully brings people together. And in an age where we're talking about being more remote, being more virtual, digital nomad, like how do you? I guess people there's kind of this discrepancy between generations. People saying, I don't feel connected to my company. I don't feel any connection. There's no loyalty, and maybe it swings both ways, right? Versus the people that say, I am part of this company. I am the company. Like that. I am a whatever organization you work for, because there is that kind of, well, I grew up with all of the people. Me and my friends. My children go to the same school as X, and that, and it's, I guess it's that difference that you see very general. It's quite generational at the moment, but how do we potentially take some of that into the next 100 years of the world? Because regardless of, and so it's another kind of scientific research, regardless of if you do remote, hybrid, or in office, the percentage differences between productivity or engagement scores or kind of whatever metric you want to do with between those is sort of like a few percentage points. What we're not talking about is the fact that globally, engagement overall, regardless of how you decide to operate your business, is at its lowest ever, I understand. And there's like, on average, I think the US economy estimates that they lose $500 trillion as a result of disengagement, whether that's passive, as in like, I just do my job, but I'm not really into it, to like active disengagement. I really hate my job. Like, if we can help to solve that, then stop worrying about what our work mode is and focus on that. I think it's nearly an 80% percentage points is just lost in disengagement, right? Or something crazy. But we're spent arguing about in office, hybrid, and remote, which is this tiny, tiny percentage point differences.
Yeah,
Because we've got
it's a bit
so
like,
involved in it.
it's a bit like replacing the plastic straw in the cups now in Starbucks with paper, but the rest of the cups all still plastic. Yeah, it's like it doesn't matter. Yeah.
But it makes them look good. Someone says, hey, then you can
Yeah.
do the marketing.
Someone pushed that project through, right? And they put it on their flag, and they made the world a little bit better. So,
I
yeah, I
guess
think.
everyone's got to do a little bit at a time. Sometimes you can't always go big bang. So I guess for me, something like that is observing the momentum. Was it a one-hit wonder, or is it genuinely the start of a bigger change?
Yeah, thank you so much, James. Thanks for being on the podcast. It was a very, I'd say, academically driven conversation. I can see you do a lot of reading. around the research, which is interesting. And maybe we should have a follow-up sometimes. I have already four or five follow-up questions on my sheet here. I would love to discuss, you know, why is disengagement going down so much, and why do people really don't like their jobs anymore or hate their jobs? And I think that maybe deserves a whole episode, perhaps, maybe some other time.
For sure. I mean, these are all topics, and I guess the takeaway is, I had a conversation with someone else, is we have an incredible number of thought leaders, and maybe I am sort of encroaching on this line. We need a lot more do leaders in the world that are helping to take science and fact and research, as you describe, and implementing it into the businesses, so we can actually see the impact of that and hopefully see people's lives improve, and by virtue of that, productivity improve globally, because it's not just a UK economy and productivity issue. Most of the globe is suffering from lower productivity levels, even though, you know, number of people in employment is at a record high.
That's right. Yeah. If there's somebody who wants to reach out to you to maybe pick up some of these conversation topics or just connect with you, is there somewhere they can reach out to?
LinkedIn is probably the easiest way, and I'm sure we'll put it at the end of the podcast or something, is getting out to me on LinkedIn and getting to that. Or you can reach us on Blue Wave, as obviously you mentioned at the start. You know, I'm keen to help to demonstrate that HR or people, or the people operations, however we want to call it, whatever label we want to, can be revenue generating just as much as any other part of an organization.
Thanks for being here. Take care, James.